lately. Summer colds are always a little trying.
Well, I was confined to the house by a severe chill for 3 days last week. I thought, however, that I'd cast off every trace of it.
Well, so you have. You look remarkably robust.
Well, how then do you know about it?
My dear fellow, you know my methods.
You deduced it, then?
Certainly.
And from what?
From your slippers.
My slippers? How on earth could
then you... You could not have had them for more than a few weeks. The soles are slightly scorched. For a moment I thought that they might have got wet and been burned in the drying. But near the instep there's a small wafer of paper with a shopman's hieroglyphics upon it. Damp would, of course, have removed this. It follows, therefore, that you've been sitting with your feet outstretched to the fire, which a man would hardly do, even in so wet a June as this, if he were in his full health.
Simplicity itself.
I'm afraid that I rather give myself away when I explain. Results without explanations are much more impressive. Now, finish your note to your neighbour and we'll be off to Birmingham.
Certainly. What's the case?
You shall hear it all in the train. My client is outside in a four-wheeler. We have time to spare, but not much. All right, cabby. Houston station.
Right, up.
In you get, Watson.
Here you are.
Now, let me introduce you. This Watson is my client, Mr. Hall Pycroft. Mr. Pycroft, my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
How do you do?
Mr. Pycroft has a tale to tell.
Indeed I have, sir.
But it's too good a tale to be interrupted, so I suggest that you do not tell it until we're on board the train.
Mr. Pycroft was a well-built, fresh-complexioned young fellow with a frank, honest face and a slight, crisp, yellow moustache. He wore a very shiny top hat and a neat suit of sober black, which made him look what he was, a smart young city man, of the class who have been labelled Cockneys, but who give us our crack volunteer regiments, and who turn out more fine athletes and sportsmen than any body of men in these islands. His round, ruddy face was naturally full of cheeriness, but the corners of his mouth were pulled down and gave evidence of distress. He was clearly nervous and worried.
Now, we have a clear run here of 70 minutes. I want you, Mr. Hall Pycroft, to tell my friend your very interesting experience exactly as you've told it to me, or with more detail, if possible. It'll be of use to me to hear the succession of events again.
Very good, sir.
This is a case, Watson, which may prove to have something in it, or may prove to have nothing, but which at least presents those unusual and outre features which are as dear to you as they are to me. Now, Mr. Pycroft, I shall not interrupt you again.
The worst of my story is that I show myself up as such a confounded fool. Of course, it may all work out all right, and I don't see that I could have done otherwise. But if I have lost my crib and get nothing in exchange, I shall feel what a soft Johnny I have been.
Your crib?
My job.
Ah.
I'm a city clerk, and I used to have a billet at Coxon and Woodhouse of Draper's Gardens. But early in the spring, they came a nasty cropper through the Venezuelan loan. You've doubtless heard of that business. It was a huge crash.
Indeed, yes, yes. One of my patients was badly stung.
Well, sir, it more or less wiped out the firm, and all we clerks were turned adrift. 27 of us. I've been with them for 5 years, and old Coxon gave me a ripping good testimonial when the end came. I tried here and tried there, but there were lots of other chaps on the same lay as myself, so it was a perfect frost for some time.
How much were you paid at Coxon's?
£3 a week. I had saved about 70 of them. But I soon worked my way through that and out at the other end. I was fairly floored at the last. Could hardly find the stamps to answer advertisements or envelopes to stick them to. My boots were worn out padding up and down office stairs, and I seemed just as far from getting a billet as ever.
But you did not give up, you persevered.
I did, yes. I saw there was a vacancy at Mawson and Williams, the great stockbroking firm in Lombard Street. I dare say EC is not much in your line, but I can tell you this is about the richest house in London.
Indeed, I know it well. I've been of assistance to one of the directors in the past in a private capacity.
The advertisement was to be answered by letter only. I sent in my testimonial and application, but without the least hope of getting it. Back came an answer by return saying that if I would appear next Monday, I might take over my new duties at once, provided that my appearance was satisfactory.
Well done, Mr. Pycroft. Congratulations. A clear case of persistence rewarded.
No one knows how these things are worked out, Doctor. Some people say the manager just plunges his hand into the heap and takes the first that comes. Anyway, It was my innings that time, and I don't ever wish to feel better pleased. The screw was a pound a week rise, and the duty's just about the same as at Coxon's.
And there was to be no preliminary interview. The job was offered sight unseen.
That is correct. Mm. It is not unusual in my line of business.
So far, so good. But now, Watson, pay attention. Mm.
That very evening, after I'd been promised the appointment, I was sitting up in my digs doing a smoke when up came my landlady with a card which had Arthur Pinner, financial agent, printed on it.
Financial agent. Did the name Pinner mean anything to you?
I'd never heard of him. But I asked the landlady to show him up, and in he walked.
Describe him.
Middle-aged, middle-sized, dark hair, dark eyes, black beard, touch of the sheeny about his nose.
Mr. Hall Pycroft, I believe?
Yes, sir.
Lately engaged at Coxon and Woodhouses?
Yes, sir.
And now on the staff at Mawson's?
Quite so.
Well, I have heard some really extraordinary stories about your financial ability.
May I sit down?
Of course.
Thank you. You remember Parker, who used to be Coxon's manager?
Indeed I do.
He can never say enough of your talents.
Oh, well, I'm very pleased to hear that.
You have a good memory.
Pretty fair.
You have kept in touch with the market while you've been out of work?
Yes, I read the stock exchange list every morning.
Now that shows real application. That is the way to prosper. However, you won't mind my testing you, will you?
Not at all.
How are New Zealand consolidated?
104.
And Ayrshires?
105 to 105 and a quarter.
And British Broken Hills?
7 to 7 and 6.
Wonderful. This quite fits in with all that I had heard. My boy, you are much too good to be a clerk at Mawson's.
Well, Mr. Pinner, other people don't seem to think quite so much of me as you seem to do. I had a hard enough fight to get this berth, and I'm very glad to have it.
Pooh, man, you should rise above it. You are not in your true sphere. Now, I'll tell you how it stands with me. What I have to offer is little enough when measured by your ability, but when compared with Mawson's, it is light to dark. Let me see, when do you go to Mawson's?
On Monday.
I think I would risk a little sporting flutter that you don't go there at all.
Not go to Mawson's?
No, sir. By that day, you will be business manager of the Franco-Midland Hardware Company Limited, with 134 branches in the towns and villages of France, not counting one in Brussels and one in San Remo.
I have never heard of that company, Mr. Pinner.
Very likely not. It has been kept very quiet. The capital was all privately subscribed, and it is too good a thing to let the public into. You follow me?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Good boy. My brother, Mr. Harry Pinner, is promoter. After allotment, he will join the board as managing director. He knows that I am in the swim down here, and he asked me to pick up a good man cheap. A young, pushing man with plenty of snap about him. Parker spoke of you, and that brought me here tonight. We can only offer you a beggarly 500 to start with.
500 a year?
Only that at the beginning, I'm afraid, but you are to have an overriding commission of 1% on all business done by your agents, and you may take my word for it that this will come to more than your salary.
But that's more than 1,000 a year.
You have my word for it, and a Pinner's word is better than a banker's draft.
Mr. Pinner, I must be frank, sir. I know nothing about hardware.
Tut, my boy, you know about figures.
Yes. Yes, I do. Mr. Pinner, I really don't know what to say. Let me put it this way. Mawson's only gives me 200 a year, but Mawson's is safe. Now, really, I know so little about your company that if...
Smart. You are the very man for us. You are not to be talked over, and quite right, too. Now, I have in my pocket a note for £100. And if you think we can do business, you can just slip it into your pocket as an advance upon your salary.
£100? This is very handsome, sir. When would you want me to take over my duties?
We would want you to be in Birmingham tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Birmingham?
That is where the company offices are at the moment. I have a rail ticket for Birmingham in my pocket also.
Well, sir, I think we are in business, as they say.
Good man. You will not regret this, Mr. Pycroft.
Now, I am going to give you a letter which you will take to my brother. You will find him at 126B Corporation Street. The offices, the temporary offices, are at that address. He will have to confirm your engagement, but between ourselves, it will be all right.
I hardly know how to express my gratitude.
Don't try, my boy. You have only got your desserts. Before I go, there are one or two things, mere formalities, but they must be observed. You have some writing paper on your table, I see. If you could just pen a few words to my dictation.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Right. Well, I'm ready.
I, Paul Pycroft, am perfectly willing to act as business manager to the Franco-Midland Hardware Company Limited at a salary of £500.
Salary of £500.
Excellent. I'll take that if I may. Thank you. Now, before I bid you good night, there is one other detail. What do you intend to do about Mawson's?
Well, I shall write and resign at once.
Ah, that is precisely what I don't want you to do.
I beg your pardon.
I had a row over you with Mawson's manager. I went to ask him about you and he was very offensive. Accused me of trying to coax you away. That sort of thing. I'm afraid I fairly lost my temper. If you want good men, you should pay them a good price, said I. He would rather have our small price than your big one, said he. I'll lay you a fiver, said I, that when he has my offer, you will never so much as hear from him again. Done, said he. We picked him out of the gutter, and he won't leave us so easily.
Well, I'll be...
Those were his very words.
He's an impudent scoundrel. I've never so much as seen him in my life. Well, why should I consider him in any way? I shall certainly not write if you would rather I didn't.
Good. That's a promise. Maybe I'll split that fiver with you. Well, I am delighted to have got so good a man. Here is your advance of £100 and your rail ticket. And here is the letter for my brother. You and he will get on famously, I think. We are very alike in appearance, except that he's fair and I'm dark. As for personality, well, he's serious and I'm not. Don't forget the address, 126B Corporation Street, and remember that 1 o'clock tomorrow is your appointment. Give me a hand, sir. You have made a wise decision, Mr. Pycroft. A momentous decision. I will see myself out, thank you. Good night. Good night.
Well, it's clear to me that you've been enjoying what I believe is known as a lucky streak.
Yes, indeed, Dr. Watson. You can imagine how pleased I was at such an extraordinary stroke of good fortune. I sat up half the night hugging myself over it.
And the next morning, Mr. Pycroft, how did you feel the next morning?
I must confess I was uneasy. It all seemed too good to be true somehow. But I had £100 in my pocket, a rail ticket and an address to go to. Business, gentlemen, is based on trust.
So off you went?
I did. I took an early train, which gave me plenty of time for my appointment. I booked into an hotel in New Street and made my way to the address of the company. 126B was in a passage between two large shops. At the bottom of a large winding staircase were painted the names of the various companies that had offices there. There was no such name as the Franco-Midland Hardware Company Limited. I stood for a moment with my heart in my boots, wondering whether the whole thing was not an elaborate hoax. I was frightened.
Are you Mr. Paul Pycroft?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am.
I was expecting you, but you are a trifle before your time. I am Mr. Harry Pinner.
Pleased to meet you.
I had a note from my brother this morning. He sings your praises very loudly.
I was looking for the offices when you came.
We have not got our name up as yet. We only secured these very temporary premises last week. Come up with me and we'll talk things over.
He was indeed very much like his brother, though fair and clean-shaven, much the same tone of voice, but decidedly less hearty in his manner. We climbed to the top of the staircase, and there, right under the slates, were a couple of empty, uncarpeted, dusty little rooms. These were the offices.
Come in, Mr. Pycroft.
Ah. You are alarmed. Doubtless you expected a great office with shining desks and rows of clerks. The noise and bustle of a thriving commercial enterprise.
Well, I...
Don't be disheartened. We are only at the beginning of our adventure. Rome was not built in a day. We have lots of money at our backs, though we do not as yet cut much of a dash in the office line. But a desk, two chairs and a ledger, all one needs to do business with. Pray sit down.
Thank you.
You have a letter for me from my brother?
Yes. Here you are.
Yes, I see. You seem to have made a vast impression on Arthur, and I know him to be a pretty shrewd judge. He swears by London, of course, and I by Birmingham. But I shall follow his advice this time. You may consider yourself definitely engaged.
Thank you.
You have received an advance on your salary, I believe?
Yes, thank you. A very generous one.
This is a very large undertaking. Doubtless you would like to know what your function will be within the framework of the company.
Oh, I would indeed.
You will eventually manage the great depot in Paris, which will pour a flood of English crockery into the shops of 134 agents in France. You will, of course, receive a commission on the sales.
Your brother did mention that.
Good. The final details will be completed in a week. Meanwhile, you will remain in Birmingham and make yourself useful.
In what way?
This book is a directory of Paris. I want you to take it home with you and to mark off all the hardware sellers with their addresses. It will be of the greatest use for me to have them.
Well, surely there are classified lists.
Not sufficiently detailed for our requirements. Stick at it and let me have the lists by Monday at 12 noon. Good day, Mr. Pycroft.
Yes, sir.
If you continue to show zeal and intelligence, you will find the company a good master. Until Monday.
Until Monday.
A strange introduction to your duties as manager. Copying out entries from a street directory.
Maybe, Dr. Watson. Though I can see some justification for it. Classified lists are often unreliable, but I was still uneasy. It was the look of the offices, the absence of the company name on the wall. These left a bad impression as to the position of my employers.
But you applied yourself to the task.
I did. Indeed, I did. I had their money. I was their employee.
And you finished it by Monday?
Oh, no. Nowhere near. I'd only got as far as H. I went round at 12 as arranged.
Was there any improvement in the state of the offices?
No. None at all. Mr. Pinner told me to come again on Wednesday, but it was still unfinished. So I hammered away at it until yesterday, Friday. Then I brought the full list round.
These meetings with Mr. Harry Pinner, they were always at a fixed time?
Yes. Always at midday. Come on Wednesday at 12, come on Friday at 12.
He was always waiting for you?
Yes.
You never had a key to the office?
No.
What happened when you finally brought the list to him?
Well, Mr. Pycroft, you have finished your task?
Yes, sir. Here you are.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid I underestimated the difficulty of all this, but the information will be of very material assistance to me.
It did take some time.
Detail does take time, Mr. Pycroft, but detail is essential to success. Now I want you to make a similar list of the furniture shops. They sell crockery too.
The furniture shops?
Yes. And you can come here tomorrow evening at 7. Tell me how you're getting on.
Tomorrow? Saturday?
Let me take you into my confidence. Things are beginning to move. I shall be receiving a communication from my brother tomorrow in the afternoon. Then things will begin to happen. And I may need your assistance.
In the meanwhile, I start on the furniture shops.
Detail, Mr. Pycroft. Detail. But don't overwork yourself, my boy. Take the evening off. Go to Day's Music Hall. Enjoy yourself. You can afford it now. Lovely girls. Great entertainers. Charles Coburn. Two lovely black eyes. Oh, what a surprise, only for telling a man he was wrong. Two lovely black eyes. First-class stuff, Mr. Pycroft.
Enjoy yourself. It's all beginning to happen, my boy. We can change the words, Mr. Pycroft, eh? What about this? Two lovely bright eyes. Oh, what a surprise. Simply for telling a man he was right. Two lovely bright eyes. See yourself out.
I was halfway down the stairs, gentlemen, before it struck me.
Pay close attention, Watson.
Right, go on.
This Mr. Pinner, when he laughed and sang, I saw that the second tooth upon the left-hand side had been very badly stuffed with gold. When I had spoken with the other Mr. Pinner in London, he had laughed a good deal. I noticed that his teeth were stuffed in this very identical fashion. The glint of gold caught my eye, you see.
Do you see, Watson?
Yes, I'm beginning to.
Well, you expect two brothers to be alike, especially if you're told that they are. The figure, the voice even, that's not surprising. But the colour of the hair, the beard, they could be fake, an easy disguise. The gold tooth, though, that was a horse of a different colour.
The two Pinners are one and the same man.
I went back to my hotel, put my head in a basin of water and tried to think it out. Why'd he sent me from London to Birmingham? Why'd he got there before me? And why'd he written a letter from himself to himself?
Those are indeed the questions.
I could find no answer to them. Then suddenly it struck me that what was dark to me might be very light to Sherlock Holmes. I had just time to get up to town by the night train and see you this morning.
You did indeed.
You will keep this appointment with Pinner.
He will, and we shall accompany him.
But how?
Mr. Pycroft will present us as two friends of his who are in want of a billet. What more natural than that he should bring us to the attention of his managing director?
And what are we supposed to be?
I shall be an accountant. You a clerk. We have some time before we arrive. You, Mr. Pycroft, must compose yourself with a view to your appointment. I must think. And you, Watson, must get into your character, as they say in the theatre.
Holmes began biting his nails and staring blankly out of the window. Between the three of us grew that air of tension and expectancy that always precedes the denouement of an inquiry. Presently, we pulled into New Street Station exactly on time. How reliable is the London Northwestern? Being rather early for our assignation, we made our way slowly along Corporation Street, which, since it was a Saturday evening, was relatively quiet and uncrowded.
It's no use being at all before our time. He only comes to see me, apparently. The place is deserted up to the very hour that he names. I've tried calling there at other times. It's always locked.
That is suggestive.
There he is. Do you see? Walking ahead of us in the brown suit.
Let us not get too close to him. We do not want to meet before he's in the office.
We dropped back slightly, still keeping our quarry in sight. We saw him suddenly check and turn his head, looking across the street towards a newsboy who was bawling out the latest edition of the evening paper. All at once, without looking to left or right, he dashed across the street, being almost run over by a cab.
Get out of it!
He bought a paper, and clutching it in his hand, he recrossed the street and vanished down a small alleyway between two large shops.
Ah, company's offices are down there.
One moment. What is it?
The paper that he's just bought. It was done on impulse, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. Unexpected, it put his life at risk. Something must have prompted him.
Shall I go and buy a copy?
No, we must not be diverted from our purpose. Lead on, Mr. Pycroft. Onward and upward.
Here we are, then. Ready, gentlemen?
Quite ready, yes.
Yes. Who is that?
It's Pycroft, Mr. Pinner.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Come in.
You asked me to... You all right, Mr. Pinner? You look...
Who are these gentlemen whom you've brought with you?
This is Mr. Price of Bermondsey, and this is Mr. Harris, who is a local gentleman.
And what is their business here?
They're both gentlemen of experience, but they've been out of a place for some little time, and they hope that you might find an opening for them in the company's employment.
Oh, yes. The company's employment. Very possibly it might be...
Mr. Pinner, are you ill?
I'm not very well, no. I have no doubt we shall be able to do something for your friend, sir. What is your particular line, Mr. Harris?
I am an accountant.
Oh, yes. We shall want something of that sort. And you, Mr. Price?
A clerk, sir.
Well, I have every hope that the company may accommodate you. I will let you know about it as soon as we come to any conclusion. Now, I beg that you will go. For God's sake, leave me to myself.
I'm sorry you're unwell, Mr. Pinner, but may I remind you that I'm here by appointment to receive some instructions from you.
Certainly. Certainly, I have not forgotten. If you will excuse me, I must just go into the other room for a moment or two. You may wait here, and there is no reason why your friend should not wait with you. I will be entirely at your service in a few minutes, if I might trespass on your patience. Thank you.
Oh, what now? Is he giving us the slip?
Impossible.
Why so?
That door leads only to an inner room.
Yes, there is no exit.
None.
Is it furnished?
Oh, it was empty yesterday.
What on earth can he be doing? Well, there's something which I don't understand in this matter. If ever a man is three parts mad with terror, that man's name is Pinner. What do you think, Watson?
Medically speaking, I'd say he was on the edge of a breakdown.
So what brought it on?
He suspects that we are detectives.
That's it.
No, that is not it. He did not turn pale when he saw us. He was pale when we entered the room. Something happened before we came in. Something changed him.
What's that? Why is he knocking at the door?
Hey. Dear God! The door's barred! Let him break it down! Hurry! Hurry! Now then! One, two, three!
Empty. There's no one in here.
There's another door in the corner.
That's only a cupboard.
Let us see.
Mr. Dear Pinard!
He's hanged himself.
Here. I'll hold him up.
Right.
Take the weight. Now, you unhook him. That's it. Bring him across here and lay him on the floor.
Capital.
Is he dead?
Not yet. He used his braces as the rope. The elastic has cut into his neck. I can't untie the knot.
Here's my knife.
Oh, good. There. And there. Oh. Now, let me see. Yes. He's still breathing.
Yeah.
Pulse is faint, but it's there. Mm. Open the window. Is there any water in here, Pycroft?
There's a carafe in the other room.
Bring it, will you?
Why did he do it? Why? To hang oneself on impulse.
He's very weak.
Here you are, Doctor.
Ah, good. Now, try and swallow some of this. That's it, that'll do. Now, lie back, lie still. Whew. A near thing. But he'll live. Now, give me a coat, Pycroft. I'll cover him up.
Here you are.
I suppose we ought to call the police in now. Yet I must confess, I'd like to give them a complete case when they come.
It's a blessed mystery to me. Whatever he wanted to bring me all the way up here for, and then...
Pooh, all that's clear enough. And it's not just a question of he. There are two of them.
But it was established that the two Pinners were the one man.
Yes, but not acting alone. I think that's fairly obvious, don't you?
But I... Oh, I must confess, I'm out of my depths.
Oh, surely, if you consider the events at first, they can only point to one conclusion.
What do you make of them?
Well, the whole thing hinges on two points. The first is the making of Pycroft write a declaration by which he entered the services of this preposterous company. Do you not see how very suggestive that is?
No, I'm afraid that I missed the point.
Why did they want him to do it? Not as a business matter. These arrangements are usually verbal, and there's no earthly reason why this should be an exception.
Oh, I don't follow.
Don't you see, my young friend, that they were anxious to obtain a specimen of your handwriting and had no other way of doing it?
But why?
Quite so. Why? When we answer that, we have made some progress with our little problem. Why? There can be only one adequate reason. Someone wanted to learn to imitate your writing and had to procure a specimen of it first. And now, if we pass on to the second point, we find that each throws a light upon the other. That point is the request made by Pinner that you should not resign your place, which would leave the manager of Mawson's in full expectation that a Mr. Hall Pycroft, whom we'd never seen, was about to enter the office on Monday morning.
My God! What a blind beetle I have been!
Now you see the point about the handwriting. Suppose that someone turned up in your place who writes a completely different hand from that in which you'd applied for the vacancy. Of course, the game would have been up. But in the interval, someone learned to imitate you, and his position was therefore secure. I presume that nobody in that office had set eyes upon you.
No, I know no one who works at Mawson's.
Very good. Of course, it was of the utmost importance to prevent you from thinking better of it, and also to prevent you from coming into contact with anyone who might tell you that your double was at work in your place.
So I was packed off to Birmingham.
Precisely. That's why you were given that handsome advance, and why, once you were here, enough work was found for you to do to prevent your going to London, where you might have burst their little game up. And that is why there has to be two of them.
Well, yes, I see that, but why should this man pretend to be his own brother?
That also is perfectly clear. One man is to impersonate you at the office, but having hooked you, they needed someone to keep you up here. This man elected to play two roles rather than admit a third person to the plot.
Yes, yes, I see now. He was taking a great risk, was he not?
All crime involves great risk, Watson. He changed his appearance and manner as far as he could. The first Mr. Pinner who came to see you...
Mr. Arthur.
Mr. Arthur, dark hair and a black beard. He would not risk disguise for that meeting. He would be close to you in a well-lit room. But here, in these dingy, ill-lit offices, he could take the chance. The beard shaved off and a fair wig added on. Permit me, Mr. Pinner.
No, don't.
There, gentlemen. The true face of Mr. Harry Pinner. Mm.
Well, it fooled me. I had no suspicions in the matter until he sang and laughed.
And you saw the gold filling.
Good Lord! While I've been fooled in this way, what has the other Hall Pycroft been doing at Mawson's? Well, what should we do, Mr. Holmes?
We must wire to Mawson's.
They shut at 12 on Saturdays.
There may be some doorkeeper or attendant.
Yes, they keep a permanent guard there on account of the value of the securities they hold. I remember hearing it talked of in the city.
Very good. We shall wire to him and see if all is well and if a clerk of your name is working there. That is clear enough. And what is not clear is why, at the sight of us, this man should instantly walk out of the room and hang himself.
The paper.
What?
That paper. It's in the paper.
Oh, of course. Oh, idiot that I was. I thought at the time...
To be sure, the secret lies there. Where is it?
In the next room. I'll get it.
Sherlock Holmes. I did not recognise you. But then my mind was elsewhere.
Here we are. It's in the stop press. Crime in the city, murder at Mawson and Williams. Gigantic attempted robbery. Capture of the criminal. Oh, that's all. No, there's no report. Murder!
It's time for the police. Mr. Pycroft, if you'd have the kindness to step out and fetch them. The doctor and I will remain on guard.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Right away!
On guard, Mr. Holmes? Do you really think I'd try to escape? No. Even if I had the strength, I haven't got the will. It's broken, gentlemen. It's broken.
I would say that you had answered the riddle, Mr. Holmes.
A half the riddle, Inspector Gabriel.
He has made a full confession. The case is closed. You gave us the key, and then it was simplicity itself. There were two villains involved, and there were two brothers.
Good heavens. But I thought that...
The Beddington brothers. You have heard of them, I expect.
Of course. Ned and Jethro Beddington. One a forger and cracksman.
And one a confidence trickster.
The perfect combination.
But we needed the key.
Excuse me, Inspector Gabriel, but what are you talking about?
Two halves of a riddle, Mr. Pycroft. The first half and your involvement in it, you already know. The second half...
was enacted earlier this afternoon in Lombard Street, London, EC1. Sergeant Tusson of the City Police observed a man coming down the front steps of Mawson and Williams. He was carrying a carpet bag. The sergeant's suspicions were instantly aroused, but when he tried to interrogate the man, he took flight. And it was only after a chase and a desperate struggle that the sergeant, assisted by Constable Barry, succeeded in arresting him.
What was in the carpet bag?
Nearly £100,000 worth of American railway bonds. And a large amount of scrip in other mines and companies.
This was Jethro Beddington, of course.
Correct.
Murder, the paper said.
Following the apprehension of Beddington, the premises were entered and searched. The body of the guard was found, doubled up and thrust into the largest of the safes. The man's skull had been shattered by a blow from a poker delivered from behind.
A brutal crime.
The Beddingtons are brutal men, Dr. Watson.
And they nearly got away with it. Nothing would have been discovered until Monday. And by that time, they would have been out of the country and away.
And the police would have been after you, Mr. Pycroft. Don't forget, the crime was committed in your name.
Phew. Lucky escape, then.
The city police were puzzled. The Beddingtons always worked together. But they'd only got one of them, and there was no obvious lead to the other. That was the riddle. And thanks to Mr. Holmes...
Thanks, rather, to Mr. Pycroft's keen eye. The riddle is now answered.
And two violent men have been removed from society.
That is true, but human nature is a strange thing, Inspector. This evening we saw that even a villain and a murderer can inspire such affection that his brother turns to suicide when he learns that his life's forfeited. Jethro will hang, and Ned, an accessory. Life, at least.
We had no choice to our action.
No, we had no choice. Well, gentlemen, we have time to catch the London train. If we hurry. There are times when the first pipe of the morning's the most welcome. But at other times, it's the pipe at the end of a successful day that gives most pleasure.
Pipe of contentment.
Mr. Pycroft's in abstract mood.
Well, gentlemen, I won't deny but that it has been a thrilling and once-in-a-lifetime experience, but I must now look to the future, which, in my case, is somewhat bleak.
Oh, dear. Do you think so?
I'm not so sure of that. Let us look at the facts. Firstly, I take it that you still have most of the £100 advance.
Oh, yes. What shall I do about that?
Well, I very much doubt if the Beddingtons will ask for it back. I should keep it if I were you. Secondly, come Monday morning, Mawson's will be a clerk short. I suggest you station yourself outside the front door before they open, and as soon as they do, seek out the manager and tell him your story.
Well, yes, but to fall for a trick like that, it's hardly a recommendation.
Oh, my belief is that the manager will have enough wit to realise that a man who's been tricked once is unlikely to be tricked again.
Quite so, I agree with that.
As for recommendations, I mentioned earlier today that I'm acquainted with one of the directors of Mawson's. I shall use what influence I have on your behalf, and I have no doubt that Dr. Watson will also back you.
Indeed I will, Mr. Pycroft. Anything I can do.
Gentlemen, I don't know how to thank you.
Don't try. Relight your pipe and entertain us with stories of the city. What was the Venezuelan loan?
In The Stockbroker's Clerk, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Madison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. With Jonathan Taffler as Hall Pycroft, Sean Barrett as Mr. Pinner, and Nigel Carrington as Inspector Gabriel. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Stockbroker's Clerk was dramatized for radio by Dennis Hawthorne and directed by Enid Williams.
Early?
This terrible heat, Captain. And then one of the men expressed a wish to see me. Poor souls, to be crammed between those fetid decks in weather such as this.
Aye, well, the conditions are no concern of ours. And who knows, maybe Providence will come to their aid. Rain down manna and drink, maybe. Even part the sea to ensure an easy passage. What do you say to that, Reverend?
Why, Captain... Simply that the ways of Providence are often like those of the peace of God, beyond all understanding.
Well, 8 o'clock near as damn it. So, if you'll excuse me...
Of course, Captain. The calls of duty. I fully understand those.
The Gloria Scott by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Simon Treves as Victor Trevor. The Gloria Scott.
You brute!
No, Cerberus! Here, boy! Here, I say! Don't move, sir! Don't move and he will ignore you! Do not stir! Cerberus! Cerberus!
Away, I say! Ow! Ow!
Oh, my dear sir! How can I apologize? Cerberus! Here, allow me. Now then, which is your college?
Yes.
Or perhaps first the doctor. Yes, I think so. This way, I beg you. Here, let me. Now, if you please, along here. Along here, dear sir.
Another winter upon us. Strange how much more depressing each one feels the older one becomes.
Watson. I've something which may both interest you and snap you out of your gloom.
Mm.
Something, too, that's the very stuff of youth. My youth.
Oh? What is that, Holmes?
That drawer, old fellow. The third one down on the right.
Yes, certainly.
Yes, you see the papers in the little tarnished metal cylinder?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Well, then, if you please... No, not the cylinder, just the papers. Yeah. Thank you. Now, you know how you've often questioned me as to what turned my mind in the direction of criminal research?
Yes. Yeah?
Well, the answer lies in this document... and in the contents of that little cylinder you hold.
Really, Holmes?
Yes, indeed. In fact, they are what remain of my first case.
Ah, at last.
As you will recall, during my youth, I spent a couple of years at Cambridge.
Yes, I do remember you mentioning it.
Where one morning, while on my way to chapel, a bull terrier suddenly froze onto my ankle. It belonged to a man called Victor Trevor.
Come in.
Ah, Holmes, how are you today? Here, some fruit.
On the table, if you would, Victor. They tell me I may leave tomorrow. Certainly my ankle now feels as strong as it ever did.
Excellent. Then we may shortly have the masks, gloves and foils out, as you promised.
A boxing gloves, I think, Victor. I'd like revenge for the injuries Cerberus inflicted on me.
Very well. You know, Holmes, they say misfortune breeds strange friendships, and, well, although you have suffered, at least I feel that the unfortunate incident has led me to a kindred spirit. The interests we have discovered in common this last week...
Yes, it's rare for two lone wolves to come together.
My thoughts entirely. So, although it is rather early in our acquaintance, I was wondering, that is, I have, if you're agreeable, something of an invitation to extend to you.
Which was to spend a month or so of the long vacation at his father's house in the country.
And did you accept?
Ah. And now, Watson, I'd like you to open the cylinder, if you would, and read the contents of the note inside.
Ah, yes, right, Holmes. Here. This tape. Some years since these knots were... That's got it.
Excellent. And the message was it.
The supply of game for London is going steadily up. Headkeeper Hudson, we believe, has been now told to receive all orders for fly paper and for preservation of your hen pheasant's life. What on earth does it mean, Holmes?
Literally. Why, Watson, I'm looking to you to elucidate that.
Me?
Yes, indeed. This time... you will play detective and attempt to crack the code before I reach the point in my tale where I must do it for you. And now to answer your earlier inquiry. Yes, I did accept the invitation and at the end of term packed a bag and set off for the house, which was at Donnythorpe in Norfolk. You know Norfolk, Watson?
Why, no. Not really, Holmes.
No, no, nor did I. At the time.
So, Holmes, what do you think of our Norfolk countryside?
All steeple, field and fen, it seems, Victor.
Which means, however, excellent duck shooting and remarkably good fishing.
Ah.
And when I add my father has a small but select library and a tolerable cook...
Then I'm your man. Two of you live alone?
Indeed. My father is a widower and my sister dead. My father... Well, a man of resolution who's made his own way in the goldfields of Australia, amongst other places. However, here he is the local justice of the peace and puts up this fierce front, but in reality his leniency from the bench is well remarked. Ah, look, Holmes, the house. Oh!
It was an old-fashioned, widespread, oak-beamed brick building with a flagstaff on one of its towers and a fine avenue of limes leading up to it. And as interesting, in its way, as Trevor Senior. As his son had intimated, the justice was a man of little culture, but of a considerable amount of rude strength, both physically and mentally. A man who had read little, I felt, but had seen much of the world and remembered what he'd seen. You have something?
I thought, if I took the first two words, then missed two, then the next two, etc., it began well, the supply for London, but then comes steadily up. Supply for London steadily up.
Not quite, Watson. Yes, old Trevor. Strong, charitable, intelligent, and without a care in the world. Or so I thought.
So, another glass of port, Mr. Holmes.
Nor can you evade the issue like that, Dad. I tell you, my friend Holmes' methods of observation and inference are almost supernatural. And would amaze even you, were he but given the chance.
Then here is his chance, laddie. Aye, and I'll provide it. So there, Mr. Holmes, what can you tell me?
About what, sir? For if I'm to give a demonstration, I must have a subject.
And so you shall, aye. And that subject will be, why, your host, that is... myself. So, Mr. Holmes, what, pray, can you deduce about me?
Well, there is not very much immediately, sir, except perhaps you've gone about in fear of some personal attack lately.
By all that's... For indeed, there was a poaching gang that threatened to... How on earth...
Your stick, sir. Obviously, recently bored and lead poured into it. A formidable weapon, which argues a necessary one.
Did I not tell you, Father?
And then, by the particular flattening and thickening of your ears, I would venture you boxed a lot in your youth, yes? And, of course, your calluses bespeak a deal of digging.
Made all my money in the goldfields.
And visited New Zealand and Japan.
Oh, that's it.
The stuffed kiwi and the lacquer cabinet.
Well, Father, does not this surpass your wildest expectations?
Why, I...
And been most intimately associated with someone whose initials were J.A., who afterwards you were eager to entirely forget.
Father? Father, what is it? Holmes, Holmes, help me.
Yes. Here. Lay him down. Don't look gentle now. And my coat, I think, are under his head, yes.
Holmes, shall I send for the doctor? How bad is he?
Shock, more than anything else, I'd say. Some water from the carafe to his lips, if you would, Victor.
Hello, Johnny. You all right?
Thirst. This heat.
Aye. So, what's a well-set-up young fellow like yourself doing on the good ship Gloria Scott, bound for a holiday in Australia?
Fraud. But for a debt of honour. I swear I intended to repay the money. And you?
Why, same as yourself. But for £250,000, none of which was found, as you'll recall. Me being Jack Prendergast.
You?
I see you know the case.
Why, I do think I remember reading of the theft.
You'll bless my name before I'm done. I'm going to get you off this brig, my friend. Because some of that money I stole has been put to good use. In buying the crew. Aye, the captain too, had I wanted him.
And it's mutiny we're talking of.
Some might call it that. Now, are you with us?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Good. Now, that cove on your other side.
Evans.
Aye, Evans. He looked like a sporting man, you think?
Why, if I understand you rightly, I think he does.
Then sound him and let me know.
Guard! Guard! Call the chaplain! You hear me? I need the parson!
I'd not have thought a man of God would have anything for you, Jack.
This one has.
Father, for God's sake, what was it? Are you better? Holmes, what do you think?
That first we restore him to his chair. Yes. And then, here, Mr. Trevor, some more of this. And may I hope it was nothing I said that pained you?
Hanky. No. It was just age. Not as young as I was. Tell me, those initials, Mr. Holmes, how did you know? What do you know?
Why, simply that when we went fishing the other day and you bared your arm to draw that fish into the boat, I saw J.A. had been tattooed on the bend of your elbow. Also that some attempt had later been made to remove it. Ergo, they had once meant something to you. Subsequently, you wished to forget them. That, my dear sir, is the total of my knowledge.
Oh, well, what eyes you have, Mr. Holmes. And it is just as you say. I would forget. For you know, the ghosts of old loves are the worst ghosts of all. Now, what about 100 up in the billiard room? And a quiet cigar?
Any luck, Doctor?
Some manner of reversal, perhaps. Reading backwards from the end of the message.
No, Watson. Do apply your mind, I beg you. Needless to say, after this exhibition of my powers, old Trevor, amid all his cordiality, always seemed to harbour a touch suspicion towards me. I tried hard to convince him I knew no more, but his unease was so evident I determined to draw my visit to a close. On the very last evening, however...
Well, we shall miss you, Mr. Holmes. No doubt about it. The trap is ordered for 9 tomorrow, is it not, Victor?
Indeed.
And I will miss you, Mr. Trevor. As I will the house and gardens, for look at that sunset. None of those in London.
No. And a great pity you... Hello. Here's May, looking rather flustered.
Excuse me, sir, but there's a man arrived, say Mr. Trevor Senior.
Oh, who is it, May?
It's just it, sir. He won't give no name, but insists he knows you, wants a moment's conversation.
Well then, show him round, would you, May?
Yes, sir. Oh, here he comes anyway, sir.
Now, Holmes, another chance to demonstrate those mysterious powers of yours. Quickly, old fellow.
Yeah, small, shambling gait, dungarees, heavy boots, brown sunlit face, hands held naturally half-closed. A seaman. A seaman who has fallen on hard times. You agree, Mr. Trevor? Mr. Trevor?
Dad? What is it? Are you all right?
Why, nothing, my boy, nothing. Just that for the moment, I imagined that... Well, my man, what can I do for you?
You don't know me?
Why? Why, dear me, it is surely Hudson.
Aye, so it is, sir. Oh. And 30 years or more since I seen you last. And here you are in your fine house, while I'm still picking my salt meat out of the cask.
Oh, you, remained at sea, then?
I've been beating up and down many a long voyage waiting for a slant. And now just off a 2-yearer in an 8-knot tramp and needing a rest, which I thought I'd get from Mr. Beddoes or you.
Oh, you know, then, where Mr. Beddoes is?
Oh, bless you, sir, I know where all my old friends are.
I see. Well, Hudson, go with May here into the kitchen and you will get food and drink. I have no doubt I will find you a situation.
Yes, sir, thank you kindly, sir. It's nice to be among friends again. Are these your boys, are they?
My son, Victor, and a college friend of his, Mr. Holmes.
Pleasure to make your acquaintance, gentlemen. And now, sir, I'll take up that offer of victuals, if I may. Then maybe you and I will have a talk about old times. Right, my pretty. May, is it?
Yes.
Well, then, May, you lead old Hudson onto the steward's parlour. Cheese, beer and onions, I think, to start with.
Father? Who on earth was that?
My first trip out to the diggings, my boy. I had to work my passage. And Hudson was a shipmate to Mr. Beddoes and myself. Yeah, now I'm feeling a little... So perhaps you'll forgive me if I leave you for the moment and retire. We'll meet, of course, at dinner, as usual. It is 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, is it not, Mr. Holmes, that you leave us?
And with that, Justice Trevor retired to the house, only to be discovered an hour or so later, dead drunk, on the dining room sofa. And the next day, with a feeling of some relief, I did indeed leave Donningthorpe. But I began to realize that not only was my presence now a source of embarrassment to my host, but also there was the makings of a very strange business in the arrival of the destitute seaman. How strange, however, I did not at the time realize. Then, 7 weeks after I returned to London...
Holmes, what if we divide the message up into 4 clauses, each separated by a comma? So, the first, the supply of game for London is going steadily up. Miss the next clause, take the following, we believe. Miss the one after that, take the next one. And for preservation of your hen pheasant's life, which gives us when we run them together...
Yes, Doctor?
The supply of game for London is going steadily up, we believe. And for the preservation of the barn...
Then, 7 weeks after I returned to London, when I was working on a few experiments in organic chemistry, I received a telegram from Victor, suggesting I return without delay.
Up there! Holmes, old fellow, forgive me sending for you in such a peremptory and what must seem hysterical fashion, but, well, the fact is, Holmes, I'm at my wit's end.
Hudson?
Yes, no... Well, that is... You remember the fellow, then?
Of course, Victor. A seaman, was he not?
Yes. A seaman called Hudson. But that was not who we let into the house that day, Holmes. Who we let in that day was someone entirely different.
Mr. Hudson! Mr. Hudson, that's one of the master's best plates!
Don't you worry about old Trevor now, mate. I'm the butler here, after all.
Butler, Mr. Hudson?
Hey.
Master Victor.
Hudson? Good Lord, is that one of the spode service?
Yes, sir. It slipped, I'm afraid. Mr. Hudson...
What the gals are saying is that I crept up from Lead and ran alongside her unawares. And as there was no fender...
I see. Well, no doubt there are replacement pieces, or at the worst we can contact the factory. And now, Hudson, my father wants some logs for the drawing room, I believe.
Then he'd better see the gardener, hadn't he?
Exactly.
Which I ain't anymore. Not since I had a word with your dad this morning, that is. Now I'm the butler. Butler Hudson. And Butler Hudson thinks he'd better fetch another bottle of port, as the last one has altogether run away through the bilges. Or there's a fierce pump on board, a sucking somewhere, if you takes my meaning. So good day to you.
No, Holmes. Who we met in that day was the devil, who has not given us a peaceful hour since. And the governor. Holmes, the governor.
But what power has he, this Hudson?
Ah, oh, that old man is why I've sent so urgently for you. Faster! Faster! I tell you, Holmes, I would have knocked Hudson down 20 times over had he been a man of my own age. In fact, well, I suppose the present crisis... You see, Holmes, one day Hudson made a particularly insolent reply to the governor in my presence, and I turned him out of the room. I don't know what passed between Dad and him after that. All I know is the next day, Dad asked if I'd mind apologising to Hudson. Well, I refused. At which poor Dad took himself off and shut himself up in his study, where I saw him later writing busily. And after that, well, looking as if the life were crushed out of him and his heart broken.
And Hudson?
Nothing until that same evening after dinner, when he condescended to join us.
Ah, Hudson, how are you now?
Not too happy. Aye, and had enough of Norfolk folk and their ways. Maybe I'll run down to Mr. Beddoes in Hampshire. You'll be glad to see me, I dare say.
You're not going away in an unkind spirit, I hope, Hudson?
Aye, well, I ain't had no apology yet from your son, Master Victor.
Ah, yes. Now, Victor, surely you'll acknowledge we've used this worthy fellow rather roughly.
On the contrary, I think we've both shown extraordinary patience towards him.
Oh, you do, do you? Very good, mate. We'll see about that. And as for you, Justice Trevor, well, you'll be hearing from me afore too long. Aye, that you will.